We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. The
score! This hour is brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto, online at CarX.com.
Russell Dorsey, national MLB insider for Bally Sports and Stadium.
President Jed Hoyer always talks about, you know, who's going to be a part of that next great Cubs team. They think Seiya Suzuki is going to be a big part of that.
A guy who is really turned into a stud and could likely be an MVP candidate, Luis Robert, has all the tools, the power, the speed.
Host of The Rally on Bally Sports.
If you could ban something from sports for 10 years, what would it be?
I would say the wave. It's a bit too much.
Analyst for Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+. Co-host of the Sports Adjacent podcast.
I don't let it get to that point where I have 1,000 unread emails.
I have 277 right now.
You have bodies in your house, bro.
Russell Dorsey.
What's up, Russ?
With Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Let's talk baseball with our guy, Russell Dorsey. You can follow Russ on Twitter, as you should be doing. At Russell, is it at Russell Dorsey? It's not on my sheet. I'm sorry.
Russ. I think it's Russ underscore.
Thank you. MLB insider for Bally Sports and Stadium, analyst for Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus and on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports books. So that was a trade deadline, wasn't it?
What's up, guys? Hey. Yes, Dan, to answer your question, I guess in the other 49 states, there was a trade deadline, but here in the great state of Illinois, I think Sox and Cubs fans, you know the sound effect that you and Terry used to use on the show, the Price is Right, bum, 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 bum. That's kind of what was heard around the Chicagoland area.
Russ, what did people tell you about the Cubs and what they didn't do yesterday?
I think from the tweet I put out a couple minutes after the deadline, that was the sentiment from a lot of the people that I talked to yesterday. And look, they didn't move Wilson Contreras. They didn't move Ian Happ. They moved the relievers that I think most people thought that would be moved, and Michael Gibbons, Chris Martin, David Robertson. Got it. But Wilson Contreras, you know, you go through that whole thing, everybody's crying and hugging over at Clark and Addison, and I think everybody from Wilson himself to the team to everything we've heard, fan base, everybody was prepared and ready for Wilson to be on the move. And I think over the last couple of weeks, same thing with Ian Happ. And then neither of those guys get moved. And I think it was pretty surprising from the standpoint of I was kind of 50-50 on if they would move Happ just because it's a guy with another year of control. And honestly, a guy that you could maybe sign to an extension for a discount at this point. But now neither of those guys being traded, it puts you in this weird limbo situation for the next 2 months.
It does, to say the absolute least, because I think if the Cubs wanted to commit to Contreras, they would have when that opportunity showed itself. So the next question is, now that they didn't get what they wanted for him in return, how do they assess the value of that draft pick as well that's now connected?
Yeah, I think that's one of the questions that you ask now. Like, when you look at what they were potentially offered over the last couple of days when it came to Wilson Contreras, did they just say, look, we're not receiving the value that we hope to have for Wilson Contreras as a rental, right? And did Jed and Carter Hawkins sit down and say, look, the value that we could get from getting this drafted conversation with the qualifying offer if Wilson walks is better than what we could potentially receive back in a trade over this last 48, 72 hours, that could have been a conversation that was had. And I think one of the things I put out on Twitter yesterday after the deadline that I wanted people to think about is the effect that Juan Soto being on the market had on Wilson Contreras. Because to me, I think there was no player more affected, or no player's market was more affected by Soto being available than Wilson Contreras. Because before that, Wilson Contreras was probably the best bat available of the guys that got moved. And then when you have all these teams focused now on Soto, whether it's the Mets or the Padres that ended up getting him, it kind of puts his Cubs in the, now you're the second, maybe third option of the big bats now, because everybody's trying to focus their resources on Soto.
So if you're Contreras and Happ, what are you feeling like today?
I think both are just, and they talked about just relieved that it's over. I think for now, Wilson, you have 2 months to go out there and show people why they should woo you this winter in free agency. And that would be any player. And I think for Ian, you know, a guy with a year of control, maybe a little less pressure than Wilson has, you just go out and show people that the first half wasn't a fluke, right? And to show people that, hey, the guy that I showed you I was in the first half of the season, I can be in the second half. And maybe force the Cubs' hand to say, okay, this guy had a monster first half and a really good second half. Maybe this is the guy we want to extend. Or if somebody comes making phone calls to Jed and Carter in the offseason, maybe you could move Ian then.
You want to check out Russ Dorsey on Twitch? You should go to twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. We've got a really cool looking four box here that Connor O'Donnell has got set up there. And yes, you can wave to Russ yourself. All right. I can't put it any more bluntly than this. How do you read the current forces at work within the White Sox organization as far as who the most powerful person is, and then how we align de facto nominal power with actual power, and how that's affecting what's going on the field?
Yeah, Dan, it's just, I think whether you talk to people around the game or you're like us here in town, seeing the situation play out in real time, it's just weird. I think that's the way that people describe it. Like, it's a weird situation where it's Jerry at the top who's like, this is what we're going to do as an organization. And then you have Kenny, then you have Rick that has to make decisions after hearing, hey, these are the orders that we've received from the ownership group, and we have to follow them. But it puts Rick in a tough spot when it comes to how do you improve your roster? How do you because, look, he's not afraid to say, hey, we believe this is our championship window. We want to win multiple championships. This is now year three of him saying that, and it's tough to look your fan base in the eye like he had to do yesterday and say, hey, I still believe it. We have championship potential. Because you look on the field, you look at the product, you look at the way this team has played in the first half and, you know, since the second half, and you're like, do they? Do they even believe that anymore? And then adding that they didn't make a move other than Jake Diekman, I don't know if – and look, I've been honest with you guys for a while how I felt about the White Sox as a team in comparison to the other playoff contenders. But – they got fortunate. They play in a bad division where they were just two games out. They're two games out of the wild card. And even if you weren't going to dive in the Juan Soto pool, okay. But there were players available that could have helped this roster. And it's hard to look your fan base in the face also and say, hey, we're going to continue to let Gavin Sheets and Leury Garcia, a guy who has a 95 weighted runs created plus and a 43 weighted runs created plus, that's going to be our everyday platoon in right field. I don't know how you can do that.
I don't know how you can do it either. And you add to it, Russ, this way that they've managed and handled injuries. I get that it's messed up all over baseball, that it's not just a White Sox thing. Everyone is dealing with this. But I don't know if I've ever seen a team bring guys back and in my opinion, rush guys back to the major league active roster, knowing that they're not going to be able to play back-to-back days.
Yeah, and I heard you guys talking about it earlier in the show where I think it was in the 10 o'clock hour, like every game is so important to them. They can't afford to have days where you don't have Luis Robert in the lineup, or if Luis Robert can only play at 50%, why is he out there? Right. And you had it with Aloy where is the leg or the knee, is he healthy enough to run? Because if he hit the ball in the gap, he needs to be on second base. And if he can't do that, he shouldn't be playing. It happened earlier with TA with the groin earlier in the year. Like it's just been too many times have you had questions. And when Lawrence, you said it best earlier, like when you're not honest about why a guy is out or not completely transparent with why a guy is out, now, whether it's us watching in the media, people who ask questions, now I have to be skeptical of the situation. And it puts your players in an unfair position because it makes it seem like, oh, they're not trying. They're not giving 100%. When in reality, they can't physically give 100%.
And I keep wondering, Russ, if you are putting them at a disadvantage to ever get to be 100%, because they're, instead of rehabbing, they're kind of playing and they're kind of trying to give all that they can. And will you ever get those guys back to where you want them to be if they're doing this piecemeal thing?
Right. And like a situation like Aloy where, you know, he's been hitting the ball hard lately, but I have a hard time believing that leg, that knee will ever be 100% during the season. Like that's something that's going to have to, you know, really get back to 100% in the offseason. And this weird situation with Luis Robert where it's a virus, but he was going to play today. Now he's not. Then he's going to DH. Then he's going to take a day off. Then he's going to play center. Then he's going to take another. It's just, it doesn't feel like the right way to go about this, especially for a team that feels they can still make it to the postseason.
Russ, I use the Minnesota Twins as the contrast point because you don't hear the same discussion when it comes to professional athletes who are inherently inclined to give their all on every play. And when it came to the explanation of how they saw the trade deadline in the trade market, they simply picked up pieces they needed. They made smart decisions with how they were able to spend some capital and try to maintain some sort of lead in this division.
Yeah, and look, that's the team ahead of the White Sox in the division. And they made I have my winners and losers column that just went up, valleysports.com. And they were my honorable mention as a winner because they picked up a quality starting pitcher in Tyler Mahle from the Reds. They picked up Jorge Lopez. They picked up Michael Fulmer, right? They bolstered a bullpen and added to a rotation and just said, look, this might not be the best division in baseball. This might not be the NL West. This might not be the NL East or the AL East. However, we're leading in this division. And we're going to make moves to ensure that we lead this division when it's all said and done. And so they were quiet moves, but they were really solid moves that makes them a better team today than they were at the beginning of yesterday.
Russ, I took a walk through Hyde Park because I needed it last night. I'm walking down 53rd Street, so I was listening to the game last night. And Lynn Casper brought up a really interesting point about the Juan Soto trade that even if you don't sign him as the Padres, you've got 2.5 years of Juan Soto, and that the Padres could win that trade in the 2.5 years, even though they gave up an incredible amount of prospects to get Juan Soto in their uniform.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you're a team like the Padres, where you have a $300 million third baseman, you have a $330 million shortstop, and then you have a top five farm system in baseball, and you find a situation where, and it doesn't come often, a generational talent is available at 23 years old, a guy who's already won a World Series title and has been top 10 in MVP voting the last 3 years and was second in Rookie of the Year the other year. He was in the big leagues. Yes, I'm going to get that guy with 2 years left of control, and the players I trade, if you're the Nationals, you're hoping that any of those players are 50% of the player that Juan Soto is right now, right? And so this is their, to use words from Rickon, this is their championship window, right? They're going to get Fernando Tatis Jr. back in a couple of weeks. And not only did they get Soto, they got Josh Bell as a rental to play first base for them, who's having a really, really good year and is having a solid defensive year first base. So You talk about bulletproofing a roster. They did that. And they've just been able to say, we don't care about big market, small market. We have a president of baseball operations that wants to win. We have an ownership group that wants to win. And they have the benefit of being the only show in town in San Diego now. And I think they take that very seriously and want to give people a reason to come to the ballpark, to go to that beautiful ballpark at Petco in San Diego and say, hey, we don't care about the Dodgers. We don't care about the Mets. We're going to go and try to win a World Series in the next 2 years.
Russ, as young a man as you are and as quickly as you have risen and are rising through the ranks of baseball broadcasters, what did Vin Scully mean to you?
Man, like, you talk about a guy that connects a generation, or not a generation, generations plural. And to have a guy who knew Jackie Robinson and had that same guy call as many World Series that he called, to be ingrained in the fabric of Major League Baseball, right? When he said Dodgers baseball is on the air, it didn't matter what team you cheered for, what team you rooted for. You're like, well, yeah, I can listen to Vin Scully for a couple hours. That's fine. He was so important to, you know, the people that are the voices of baseball. Like, for a generation and generations of broadcasters, like, that's the standard. That's the bar, right? That's the GOAT to so many people, not only in baseball, but in sports. Like, you don't get any bigger as an announcer than Vin Scully. And so I think that's a giant loss. But what he meant to the game, what he added to the game, is something that won't be forgotten. And I don't think people like me, like you guys, who love the game of baseball and understand how important he was to the history of the game. Because, look, like, broadcasters are just as important to me as the product on the field, because, you know, there's a lot of time in between pitches, as I'm learning doing these games on Friday night. And how do you, you know, keep an audience engaged? And he was so good at it, and with an iconic voice. So he will definitely be missed, but we were blessed to have him on this earth for as long as he did. And my life as a baseball fan is definitely better. And my life as a broadcaster now is definitely better because Vin Scully was here.
Because of what Apple's done over this last year with baseball, I'm curious, Russ, will the schedule for you change depending on what the races are, or are the games no matter what?
So I actually got an email about that this morning. So there won't necessarily be a delineation now between the East Coast crew, which is myself, Melly Newman, Chris Young, and Trisha Whitaker, and the West Coast crew of Heidi Watney, our guys, Steven Nelson, Katie Nolan, and Hunter Pence. So I had some West Coast games mixed in there in the second half. But this one on the schedule a couple weeks ago didn't look appealing, but it definitely does now. Next week, we will be NBC, Padres against the Nationals, and it should be a really, really good one.
That is fantastic to hear, because I'd say the Padres did what they set out to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, like, you're going to have – it's going to be a different vibe. You're going to have Juan Soto, who was so important to that franchise, playing in D.C. this quickly after being traded. You don't see it that often, but yeah, we're going to be there for it and giving that to people, all the different angles on Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV.
Russ Dorsey, thank you. Look forward to talking again next week.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Russell Dorsey. You know, yesterday around this time, we talked to Ian Happ, and if you were listening to the whole thing, you heard an emotionally torn All-star outfielder trying to figure out where he was going to be, what was going to happen, being completely honest about his relationship with fans and about what was weighing on him. And did you see his tweet when the deadline passed?
I did.
And it was a tweet from the Wolf of Wall Street. And it's Leonardo DiCaprio finishing a speech and then smashing the microphone against his head.
I'm not leaving. The show goes on. This is my home. They're going to need a
wrecking ball to take me out of here. They're going to need to send in the National Guard or SWAT team because I ain't going nowhere.
That's what that is.
That was what that was. That is what Ian Happ tweeted from his official account. I want to bring back some of what he said and then play Jed Hoyer after the fact explaining why so much we expected to happen didn't happen. What was all that? We'll try to figure it out next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I mean, I did assume that I was getting moved, even though that they didn't say anything like that. But it happened years before, so you, as a human being, you just assume things, and that's what I did. But nothing. I'm just looking forward to get back on Wrigley Field and keep playing for the Cubs.
See how easy? That was Wilson Contreras, and all the hugs and all the goodbyes, and they're still here. It's like at a party. The people who don't ghost are the people who just spend saying goodbye to everybody. It's like, you already said goodbye to me. Leave already.
Remember that time we said they didn't have to trade him and then they didn't? But then we're not happy about that either?
I don't know that I'm not happy about that. It would be nice if this was accompanied by a declaration of intent to re-sign or work as hard as they can to re-sign. But they seem like they're in between.
And if I wasn't worried that you played chicken and lost. Because that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that the Cubs played. Jeb is out here like, no, we'll just wait. We'll just wait. The price will go up. The Soto deal goes through. The price will go up on Wilson. And people are like, no, we're good. Everyone's set. So thanks for playing. But no, which is part of the reason that I wish overall, and I know that you're going to do like an overall, like a encompassing thing, Layla, at one about this. But I wish that more general managers, especially for teams that knew they weren't bleep, would jump out ahead of the trade deadline. And I know that they think that they'll get less because of it, but can you get less than a compensatory pick for a free agent leaving?
I think the problem is also, though, that nobody knows where they are. The teams that usually make the big deals at the trade deadline are trying to either ensure that they're winning a division like the Twins wanted to do. They're filling gaps for injury, like we saw the Astros do in acquiring Trey Mancini, or they're trying to close a gap like the Padres did in acquiring Juan Soto.
I'm not saying you have to do it in June, but there was nothing that was stopping you from doing it in the last week of July.
Here is Jed Hoyer when asked about if this outcome sent mixed messages.
I think that maybe because of last year and the fact that we were able to find deals last year that for our expiring contracts that really have held up exceptionally well. I think that maybe there was this assumption that we would definitely move him. There was never anything said by us. You know, we've obviously, we're not going to talk about contract negotiations, but obviously I've been in communication with his agents, you know, throughout the month. And we never gave any message to anyone that was like, you know, we're going to trade him at all costs. Or, you know, it was like, we're obviously going to discuss him with teams. And if it makes sense for the Cubs, we'll do it. So I think he knew that, but obviously I think there, like I said, I think there was the assumption based on last year that we would do it. And I do feel for him on the emotional toll, you know, saying goodbye to people, thinking you played your last game and things like, you know, with the Cubs and then obviously, you know, not being traded. I think there's a yo-yo impact to that. But again, it's not based on any mismessaging from our side. We never said that. We never found a deal that came close to the right value.
Okay. In communication with his agents, made it sound like that there was a two-way communicative street there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we asked Ian Happ yesterday on this show about the information he was or was not getting himself from the front office.
I'm super involved. But as you know, in the trade stuff, you know, you don't have any control. There's no decisions to make. You know, you're just along for the ride. So, you know, this is something where you stay as informed as you can and try to understand what's happening and why it's happening. But, you know, unfortunately, in these situations, it's all guessing and you don't get a lot of information until things actually happen.
You don't get a lot of information until things happen.
I'm not surprised by that.
I'm not either. It's just, I'm not sure that I'm buying what Jed is trying to sell on all of it.
I was just saying that was kind of his lot in life yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt, right? Like, that's what happened to him. I'm just not, I think that he probably held out for too high of a price.
Yeah.
And now he's stuck. Now he's stuck because people are like, oh, well, did you want to keep him? No, we just didn't want to trade him because we weren't going to get requisite value. Well, what value are you going to get when he walks away? A compensatory pick between 67 and 80.
I will say this. He gave you a little bit more there than you think when he said based on last year. And I also, based on the actions of Jed Hoyer last year, trading away players, thought that he would have traded Wilson for any price. So what exactly changed then to where that wasn't the case for you? Because I'm still trying to figure out what the hell happened last year. Well, if it's not what we thought it was.
My whole thing with when it comes to judging Jed is I don't want to give him credit for stuff that happened before his administration started. And so I'm judging him on all this stuff going forward. And I feel like that he maybe just didn't read the room. And that's okay, that he maybe just didn't understand what the value in this market was for the players. And he saw all of this stuff go on. He saw how the outpouring of affection from Wrigley Field fans, he heard Ian Happ on our air and in interviews that he had done, that these guys were miserable. And if you felt for them, you could have been a little bit more upfront about what your plans were with them. With them.
But the thing is, to me, the price was set last year. When you saw all these teams not give away big name prospects in trades, he experienced that. Pecro Armstrong is looking like a hell of a deal in comparison. But this is a trend that started a while back, and that's what I want to get into at 1 o'clock.
I'm not going to reflexively just say, well, Jed's got it all figured out. Because maybe he is the smartest guy in the room. I'm not the only person that's saying this. There are people around baseball that literally said to reporters, what the bleep are the Cubs doing? And I think it's pretty simple. Like, to me, it's not, you don't have to do second level thinking on this. He thought he was going to get more than what was available for Wilson Contreras. And he thought that the deadline was going to spur action and was going to give him more leverage than he actually had.
And he got stuck holding the bag.
That's right. To me, it's just a failure. It's a failure that you can look at and say, this doesn't make any sense. It doesn't match any of the things that you did last year. It doesn't match what most people think is your horizon for the next great Cubs team. You got caught. Just say you got caught because you got caught.
Now, I've never been in the room where it happens for any kind of deal like this. But presumably, you build a safety net with your relationships. And if people are trustworthy in this business, and they've all worked together, and they all know each other, and you don't last very long if you're really screwing people over, accidentally or not, Jerry Angelo. So what can be done is you say, hey, if I call you with 30 seconds left and we're here, here, and here, are we still on for this? Like, there are fail safes. There are flow charts that where you can say, at worst, we're still going to have this deal available to us. That we may get this, and everybody understands the order in which these things work, and you are able to maintain some secrecy without lying to anyone. And I'm wondering how many things had to fall through. I'd love to know what he's not telling us. Maybe something really bad happened. For it to go like you believe happened, for a GM to be left without a deal, without a chair when the music stops, a lot of things have to go wrong.
I don't know about that. I just think the market changed when Soto and Vasquez were two of the guys who are now being discussed. We all heard that the Astros supposedly wanted in on Contreras' deal, and then they end up acquiring different players. We saw the Padres, who were supposedly in on that, and they obviously went in the biggest direction possible. And then the Mets, who were another trade partner, how did they feel about their previous trade with the Cubs? Especially now.
Well, there were and that's not even talking about Tampa, who had a need for a Wilson Contreras type player.
But then what's interesting also is, did anybody expect the Red Sox to not only be buyers but sellers at the same time?
Yeah, that's another team where I'm not quite sure what they're doing.
I don't know if they know.
I really don't know.
So I'm not trying to make excuses for people, but I do think that those were factors in this.
A lot of things have to go wrong for that deadline to pass, and you're stuck with somebody who had that much value going in.
Well, I also wonder if we're not looking at the way they built the team in the offseason with the right lens. I know they weren't the biggest names, but they did acquire a lot of players. And when you add, say, a Suzuki to that, like, think about Marcus Stroman, who they acquired. Think about Wade Miley, for example. If you consider the players they have on the injured list right now, you're talking about Andrelton Simmons, Wade Miley, Alec Mills, Kyle Hendricks, Adward Alsilay, Cody Hoyer, Manuel Rodriguez, Michael Amarcio, Ethan Roberts, Brad Wick, Stephen Brault, Jason Hayward. If you try to look at that as a whole before they started trading players, did they think that they had a potentially playoff team?
I would be shocked if they thought that were the case.
I think we have to at least ask the question based on what we're seeing right now. Did we look at it differently?
I just think that I think Jed thinks he's playing four-dimensional chess, and they're like, no, we playing checkers over here, fam. And guess what? King me. You got to keep these dudes.
If they say, yeah, we're keeping these dudes, and look at the Seiya Suzuki contract at his age and what he does, and that's going to be a model for this offer to Ian Happ, and this will be our range. There would be some semblance of consistency if there were a commitment to that commitment, and they're not even mentioning or talking about that possibility now. Even if it were face-saving, even if they kind of backed into it and said, welp, we'll lean back in. And tried to, and made it look like it was the plan all along, because, you know, we're not going to give up this much of a core for that little price that anybody was asking. And now, damn it, we're going to roll with it. They didn't even do that.
No, but I do just want to try to see if there's something that we missed.
It seems like there's something that they missed out of an opportunity. And now you got to live with compensatory picks. If they re-sign Wilson at the end of this and that was their plan, fine. But you have another year of Hap, so there's no urgency there. But this feels like a fail to me.
Man, if you're Wilson Contreras, even if they give you the exact deal you want,
I don't know if I'm taking it.
Knowing how much loyalty obviously meant to him, I don't know that that's the play either. If you know that the team is willing to part with you and has said as much twice now. Twice.
Yep. That's why, you know, you play silly games, you get silly prizes.
That's Lawrence Holmes. I'm Dan Bernstein. Layla Rahimi is with us today. We're going to get back to some football stuff. There was something that was said on these airwaves yesterday that is also worth a reconsideration and a discussion as we bring some Bears back to the forefront next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Yesterday, we had an incredible conversation with Jaquan Brisker. Along with talking football stuff with him, we found out that he and his family were planning on talking with Bill Russell about the history of John Brisker.
To help find out if John Brisker, Jaquan's grandfather, is living or dead or was in Africa or worked for Idi Amin or was murdered by Idi Amin
or worked for the CIA
or maybe was created his own mercenary army. So
of course Bill Russell would have known.
We use his coach.
Right. Well, they didn't get along either. Famous. There was John and Bill did not see eye to eye. If you read some of the Seattle stories.
I'm so appreciative that he was interested in the history and he was willing to talk to us about it. I thought that was really dope. But what fascinated a lot of people, and I love recall. I love when players do recall on stuff. And so we asked him about the play that he made against Wisconsin, this really beautiful interception that he made, and he broke it all down for us.
Going full speed and punching the ball out and then tipping overthrows we got ahead of. So, you know, just little things like that. Just make sure, you know, we're getting the turnovers, you know, in every way possible and giving the ball back to the offense.
When I was covering the Bears every day, I covered the career of Charles Tillman. And obviously, he's the man that brought you the peanut punch. Have you talked with him and have you watched a bunch of his videos and for some help on some technique on how to get the ball out?
When I first came up here for, you know, rookie OTAs, he had talked with all the rookies and just kind of taught us, you know, what his thinking process was. You know, what he used to do before practice, you know, getting his hands taped up because he knew he was going to punch the ball out. And then just, you know, certain, you know, ways like that you could punch a ball out when the offense is really not noticing. So he has talked to us and I talked to him on the side. And he was part of my group at the combine. So, you know, I got to talk to him there too before I was there.
So what'd you learn from him outside of that? Because it's a smart dude.
Yeah, just depending on the offense running, just depending on, you know, the ball and the angle. Especially when they're not noticing you or, you know, when they're like comfortable with the ball, you know, that's a great time to punch it. And then you really got to go full speed and just punch that thing out. So, you know, just give it all you got.
Can I take you back to a college play for a second? Because I watch it a lot. That interception that you had against Wisconsin,
Yeah. That's
like an impossible play, man.
Fourth down and goal at the 8-yard line for the Badgers. Down by six. Graham Mertz, the sophomore quarterback, drops back, floats it in the end zone, and is intercepted! Brisker! Wow! Brisker!
When you made that play, like, I'm actually watching the video right now of you, like, running off the field where you broke their heart. So when you have a play like that in that moment, how good does that feel, and what did you see there?
It felt great, but you know, what I seen, we were in cover zero. I had the running back, but it was the red zone, so I knew if I came from depth, I wasn't going to make it. So once the running back blocked, I knew that from watching, you know, previous film that they wanted to go to number 84 the whole time, especially in the red zone. You know, he's big and things like that. So once I seen the running back block, I just went over there and just stole it, and then the rest goes back for itself.
I love recall. And there were a lot of people who were talking about it, like, this guy remembers that play. We're talking about a guy with a high football IQ that walked us through the things that he saw on an individual play. I love that.
And the fact that he just pointed out, too, the importance of the red zone changing the complexion of the play. Once he was going to commit, he made that decision. He assessed the risk. There were so many things that I enjoyed about him just taking you through the thought process and really showing off the way he was able to absorb the film study.
It's the opposite of what I was saying about Bears rookie fifth-round left tackle Braxton Jones, where that guy is saying, well, this is all new to me, this idea of understanding what the defense is trying to do. Really?
Yeah.
It's that new to you? Like, well, he's starting from such a different place.
Like, the difference in the type of football that those guys played in college is immense.
A lot of times it really does, even at those levels, come down to who has the more talented group of players, and you just outman a lot of people. How many times in college football have we seen guys just get open? You can't tell NFL wide receivers just get open. It doesn't work that way. But when it came to what Brisker was saying, we have not had a lot of that from the Bears. And I don't know if it's on purpose because PR is concerned because it's scheme or what have you. But either way, to hear somebody talk about the film and understand it and break it down to that level and tell you exactly what they wanted to do. And to me, at the end of the day, execution is paramount. That was so refreshing to hear.
I love it.
When was the last time you heard a Bear say that?
I've always, no matter who it is, whether, you know, Larry Bird was famous for it, LeBron James, remembering every play of a game, being able to take you all the way through from the opening tip, what happened and what they saw. Golfers are insane.
Pitchers, too.
Golfers, you can talk about a hole on a given day in a tournament on a course, and they will tell you the wind. They'll tell you where the sun was. They'll know exactly how the rough was cut, what club they had in their hand, everything. It's a multi-sensory memory.
Layla, did you say pitchers?
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you how many interviews I've done with pitchers who are like, oh, yeah, the 3-2 ball to so-and-so in the fourth inning 7 years ago on Tuesday. And I'm like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
This is even when guys were expected to throw 100 every time. Your starters, and they still could name you every single strategy on every single pitch.
I love when people talk about sequencing. I love when football people walk you through stuff. I was telling Mike Rankin, I was like, I really like talking to football players. It's where I'm probably most comfortable because I did it for such a long time. But I love the intricacies of the positions and hearing him talk about wanting to be a guy who put a hurt on people and figuring that out pretty quickly in his high school career. And then you dedicate yourself to being the best safety that you can be. Since Amos has gone to the Packers, they've needed someone like Brisker. They need someone that can take control. And you didn't hear him yesterday, Dan, shy away from leadership. He understands that his, by nature of his position, being the last line of defense, he understands that there is a leadership quotient to what it is that he does. And I love that he's not running away from it even as a rookie. That's strong to me. And so I can't wait to see him in action and how he continues to grow as a safety. Because that position, and strong safety in particular, has been a need for the Bears for the last 3-4 seasons.
And in this defense, when a one-gap defense breaks down, it can look really bad. And we know how they talk about gap responsibility and, well, he was here and then I was here. And we see when it fails, the house of cards collapses quickly. And sometimes when the old last line of defense doesn't just mean some guy getting behind you. It means sometimes you have the last shot to make up for the mistakes of this guy, this guy, this guy, to notice it early and be there earlier than you should be.
Which is why it's so refreshing just to hear that thought process, because we just haven't heard it a lot. Like, it was so wonderful to hear. I also think, though, when it comes to leaders on the defense, watch out for Jalen Johnson.
Sure.
Who wasn't afraid to speak about Roquan Smith when he showed up at, as we all know, was the hold-in. I think he was not afraid to speak out. He was one of your first canaries in the coal mine last year to let you know that things might not be as stable as we thought with the regime. So I think Johnson is in a very good place right now to be one of those people on this defense.
When I watch his tape, and I want to be very careful because comparing players is not always fair, but when I watch his tape, the name that comes to mind is Bob Sanders.
Ooh.
A bigger, stronger version.
Okay, I was going to say, Bob Sanders hit so hard he shortened his career.
Yeah, he's my size, but Brisker's legit like 6'1 and probably 10, 15 pounds heavier than Bob Sanders.
Sanders moved with menace.
Yeah, and when you watch Brisker's tape, that's what I see.
That's what you need in the modern NFL. Like, you need that body, especially located where he is.
Yep. Little Bears note before we break. This is Mark Grody, who says that Bears running back David Montgomery told us he had been feeling very depressed, but he's much better now. And Grody mentions he will bring that audio to his next scheduled Bears hit, which is just 3 hours from now at 4 o'clock with Parkins and Spiegel, with whom we will do transition in a little less than an hour. We are the Bernstein and Holmes show with Layla Rahimi sitting in. We got an umbrella perspective on this MLB trade deadline, how some larger forces at work may have affected the teams locally. Layla's going to walk us through some of that stuff next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.